9, Capital Nun Tess. And this is the third in a trilogy of three Kapitala that are called the Al Tashches Kapitala, because they all have in the first verse, Al Tashches, do not destroy. And they all are centered around David and Shaul and the episodes that we've spoken about in the last 2 weeks, where Shaul came close to killing David, and each time David refused to harm Shaul in any way. Now, in this particular kapitel, David was playing for Shaul in order to try and ease Shaul's severe depression. Shaul became enraged at David and threw his spear at him, barely missing him. David fled to his house, and Shaul sent soldiers with instructions to surround his house, watch him all night, and kill him in the morning. Now, David was married to Michal, who was the daughter of Shaul. Fortunately, liked her husband more than her father, and arranged a plan whereby she made a made up David's bed with clothes and looked like a dummy to look like he was really there. He snuck out the window, and then when the soldiers came in the morning, they stabbed the fake dummy with their spears. They returned to Shaul in triumph. Shaul says, "Well, where is his body? Go back and get it." So they went back and got it and discovered that they had been tricked. By that time, David HaMelech was long gone. After that, David HaMelech wrote this kapitel, the third of the Al Tashches. Now, this is a tremendous accomplishment on behalf of David HaMelech, that he's, at the time of severe oppression and difficulties, he's able to continue to write the kapitelach in praise of Hashem, like we're about to read. Now, David was 100% a victim here. Shaul had absolutely no legitimate complaints against David, and David had really no court of appeal, at least on earth, that he can go to. There's no way to appeal against the king. There's no judge, there's no court of appeals. Now, the country is filled with courts, and filled with bate dinim, right? And there's a Sanhedrin, and nobody will speak up on behalf of David. So he has absolutely no recourse. He's been shut out of every legal recourse that he has. He's literally fleeing for his life, and yet he continues to, rather than be oblivious to the world around him, he continues to strive to recognize Hashem and to write to Tehillim. Most people, when they're facing a severe oppressive situation, lose the ability to focus on anything except themselves and their own problems. That's human nature. When you're oppressed, you're under the gun, either a little bit or severely. I mean, there have been people that are in jail and are going through horrible things, and they're not really focused on the beauties of Hashem's world. They're focused on, oh my gosh, my poor pathetic situation here. Yet David HaMelech was able to, despite his terrible situation, was still able to remain focused on what we would call the big picture. And that's a tremendous accomplishment that runs throughout all of Tehillim that we sometimes tend to overlook. Chazal tell us that when Nebuchadnezzar wanted to write praises to Hashem, and that he wrote praises to Hashem, and Nebuchadnezzar, of course, was extremely wicked individual. And the Chazal tell us that a malach had to come and strike Nebuchadnezzar's hand so that he wouldn't be able to write Kapitelach as beautiful as David HaMelech. Whoa. That would seem to take the wind out of everything we've been learning here now, wouldn't it? Right? Nebuchadnezzar could write something as beautiful as David HaMelech. How is that possible? You know Chazal tell us? Anybody, when they're on top, can write. When you're on top and things are going your way, it's easy to write beautiful verse, beautiful poetry. When you're hiding out in a cave, it's not so easy. David HaMelech's accomplishment is not only the writing of Tehillim and the ability to give over these ideas and messages, but to do it under circumstances that would try anybody's ability. Most people would not be able to focus on these things while they were undergoing such kind of trial. And again, David HaMelech was 100% innocent, yet had no court of appeals,
Imagine being charged with a capital crime, and every single court in every single city in every single state in the United States refuses to hear your case. And you're completely innocent. Yet no one will hear your case, and no one will take up your case because the president has decided he doesn't like you. So, of course, you occupy your time by writing about the beauty of Hashem's world. Well, no, you probably don't. You probably occupy your time writing appeal letters, right? And putting ads in the, you know, Jewish press, please help. And that's often enough. So, on this occasion, after he escaped out the window, and Shaul's men had too much time had gone by for them to pursue him, that's when he wrote this kapitel, the third of the Al Tashchis. Let's take a look and see what David HaMelech says. In the first pasuk, he says, "L'manatzeach al tashchis." This is for the conductor, the person leading the Tehillim. Al tashchis, don't be destroyed. L'David michtam. This is by David. It's a michtam. Vishloach Shaul. When Shaul sent v'yishmoros abayis la'miso, and it sent people and they guarded the house of David in order to kill him. So the first pasuk sets the stage for us. Now, Shaul HaMelech, I probably mentioned before, is renowned as a tremendous military general. When he took over as king, he subdued almost all of Klal Yisrael's enemies. The Plishtim were still a problem left for David HaMelech, and even though we talk about the Plishtim, the Philistines coming and this and that, before David HaMelech took over and before Shaul HaMelech took over, the Plishtim were just one of many countries all around Klal Yisrael that were constantly warring against them. They were always hanging on by a thread. Right, because the tribes couldn't necessarily agree amongst themselves. Welcome to Kleiser. Right, couldn't necessarily agree amongst themselves as to what to do. All right, there was no strong leader to get everything together, no big general who could. So along came Shaul HaMelech, and he got everything together. The Plishtim were still a problem, right? And David HaMelech would not deal with the Plishtim, but all these other nations were to do. Nobody wanted to start up with Kleiser. He was a brilliant general. Now this brilliant general sent the men to kill David HaMelech and told them to wait till morning. Doesn't seem like such a brilliant general move, does it? If David HaMelech is such an enemy, you're going to send him all the way to his driveway, so to speak, his horseway, and you're going to tell the men, I want you to stand right there outside all night, and then kill him in the morning. Not too slick of a move from a master general. So the Al-Sik says it has to have been a miraculous intervention from Hashem, because no general worth his salt would come up with such a plan. And we see throughout all of Nach, when we see the history of Shaul HaMelech, that it's a brilliant tactical military maneuvers. So here, Hashem, the same Hashem that sent him this depression in the first place, pulled back a little bit and put in his head the idea that maybe the men should wait overnight, to giving David a chance to escape. It goes on in the next pasuk to say, "Hatzileni me'ayvai, rescue me from my enemies, Elokai, my God, misakai me'ay, zagveni, from those who rise against me and raise me high." There's a lot of different explanations as to what the riser against me's means. In general, it's clear that it's his enemies. But I think that rather than get way into which enemies exactly he means, I think rather I'd emphasize what Rav Hirsch says. Rav Hirsch says that he emphasizes David here, the rising. The rising against me, the raise me high. He says, because what is David HaMelech's crime? Quote unquote, in quotes. His star is rising too fast. That's his crime. That's what's Shaul HaMelech is not happy with. Who is this David? Right. That wants to take away of me for something for me. Depending on what day it is and what kind of mood Shaul is in. Now, even though we've talked about it in past year, I mean, we do have to mention parenthetically that Shaul was a tremendous tzaddik. The story is not meant as a question, and the whole conflict between Shaul and David is tremendously complicated. But nonetheless, David HaMelech here is completely innocent, except for the fact that his star is rising. So these enemies, they're rising against me. Hirsch says they're rising is like a metaphorical illusion that David's star is rising, and that's what's causing people to be unhappy. And certainly that's something that we see in human nature all the time. People are upset with so-and-so, and you can't darn it decide what it is the person did, except they're just so doing it. All right? Their star is rising, and for some reason that's annoying to you. All right? Why should you care that their star is rising? Why should Shaul care that David HaMelech's star is rising? That's not right. We got to get that guy. That's David HaMelech's crime. Is that Hashem decided it was David HaMelech's time? It goes on in the next pasuk in verse 3 to say, Hatzileini mi pilei avin, save me from the doers of evil, ume anshe damim hoshieni, and from the bloodthirsty people save me. So the men of evil were the people surrounding the house, and then the bloodthirsty people are the ones who are going to actually go in and kill it. Right, not all soldiers, they weren't going to send the entire army, 3,000 men, in next to his bed. But rather there was a cordon that was surrounding the house, and those people are the evildoers, because they're participating in this evil plan, and the bloodthirsty people are the soldiers that are actually going to go in and kill him. All right, so he needs to be saved from both of those people, really. He needs to not only not be killed, but he needs to get past this cordon of soldiers. Right? Now, when we say, you know, we talk about soldiers, I mean, imagine, it's hard for us to imagine what a soldier was like in those days, so let's just picture a soldier in our days. Let's picture a cordon of 3,000 Marines with AK-47s surrounding one house. Sort of a bleak picture if you're the guy in the house. So David HaMelech not only needs to be saved from the 10 guys that are going to come in and kill him, he needs to be saved from all the guys that are surrounding the house as well. It goes on in verse 4, in Pasuk Dalet, say, Kine orvu l'nafshi, they lie in ambush for my soul, yaguru alai azi, they gather around me, they're brazen ones, they're mechutzim, they're coming against the king of Israel. Lo fishe v'lo chatasi, but not for anything I did, I didn't do any averes, Hashem. Oh Hashem, I did nothing wrong. They're not coming, so I'm not justified in being killed here. Unless Hashem wants me to be. But I have done nothing wrong. Beli avon, iratsu, and vichadono. They run and they run to attack me. They run to prepare. Urali krasi ure. Awaken yourself towards me and see what they do. So they're running all around and preparing. They're not even doing this in secret. They're making a big tumult and going around in public bragging about this great mission they're doing for the king. Shaul, King Shaul. They don't even have the sense of what they're doing is so wrong that they should do it, but sort of keep their mouth shut. Rather, they're so excited they've been sent on this important mission for the Shaul HaMelech that, you know, they've done everything short of putting up a neon sign, we're very important, we've been selected for this important mission. They run around, they prepare this, they come toward me and see what they're doing. Ve'ata Hashem Elokim, and you Hashem, my God. Tzvakos Elokei Yisrael, the master of Israel. Hakitza Litkoid, get up and remember Kol Hagoyim, all the nations. Al Tachun Kol Boigde Avin Sela, and don't show any favor to people who have no faith, Sela. Now it seems like David has taken a major, as the kids would say today, a major turn in the convo. First of all, we're talking about Shaul HaMelech. All of a sudden, he's saying, "Remouse yourself against the nations." I had the nations kid in here. I thought we were talking about Shaul HaMelech. No, you didn't fall asleep. We didn't change the subject while you were dozing over here. It's all the Mefarshim jump in here. It's all in a second. All of a sudden, he's talking about Shaul HaMelech, and now he's turning to the nations. What is it that he's trying to get at here? So, all the Mefarshim have different approaches to what David HaMelech means. And we're going to talk to a couple of them that are very interesting. First, this says, you know what? David HaMelech has despaired of getting justice in his own time. Imagine the courts of the entire country, everything from the little courts in the city of three, the regional courts, right, all the way up to the Sanhedrin, Agadol, and he can't get justice. No one will hear his case. So you know what? He's despaired of justice in his own time. He's looking forward to the time when the whole world will recognize Hashem, and there'll be justice everywhere. And no one will ever have to be in his situation again. They'll be able to go to any court and get justice. Now the Malbim says, you know why he's asking Hashem to take care of the nations? Because he feels that now he can't lead Klal Yisrael. How can he be their general and take care of their army and their military needs while he's on the run from Shaul? So he's saying, Hashem, you take care of the nations. Not in the usual sense that he's saying that, you know, pour out your wrath on the nations of evildoers. He's saying literally, watch the borders, Hashem. Right? Because I can't do it because I'm hiding out over here. And a third explanation is that the nations refers, he's still talking about Shaul. Do you know what we call Shaul the nations? is the Jews asked for a king. And they asked for a king, why? So they could be like all the other nations. Solomon says, you know what? You got what you asked for. You want to be like the other nations? You got it. You got a king embroiled in politics, chasing after another king, armies doing things wrong. You want to be like the other nations? Mazel tov. You did it. Like Hashem, take care of these nations, quote unquote. The Shalmel, these people are doing like the nations. We talked before in this year that Shmuel Hanavi did not think the Klal Yisrael was ready for a king. It's a mitzvah of the Torah to have a king. Hashem told him, yeah, they're ready. Go ask them. So he asked them, and he told them, now watch out. Said, oh, if you get a king, you know, you got a lot of taxes, and he can just tax you to, stress taxes a lot, never a popular subject. A lot of taxes, and going to have, he can conscript everybody in the military, he's going to have all these horses, it's going to get bowed down all the time, it's not just an easy life. And they said, no, no, we want a king, so that we can be great, like the Tyrus says, and they had, and be like the other nations. Three words too many. Those three words, Klal Yisrael, sealed a faith of many different things that we have talked about in past shirim and we will talk about in future shirim, and that, like other nations, and they just stopped. Said, yes, we want a king. The Torah told us to have a king. That was sort of a metaphor for life. Three words too many. Like, you know, you have an argument with your spouse. You everything's going perfect. You're all made up. And then you just get that last little word. Oh, no, all of a sudden you're back to where you started from. Why'd you have to say that? Why'd you have to add that one more thing in there? So David HaMelech is saying metaphorically, take care of these nations, the Shal. You want to be like the nations? You got it. Then he goes on to say in Zion, Eshuva l'arav, they return toward evening, Yehamuka kelev, and they howl like a dog, V'yisovavu ir, and they go round about the city. So they're howling like a dog. They have, you know, dogs, stray dogs at night. They run around, they howl, they have no concern where they're going, where they're doing. They're walking around. We're on an important mission for the king. Get out of our way. We have to go kill David. Stand aside. Hineya biyun v'fihim. They spew forth with their mouths, Haravos v'sif sehem ki mishomea. And in their lips they say, who's listening? So they spew with their mouths. David HaMelech, you know, this is really the beginning of their crime. The origin of everything that happened against David HaMelech is because people open their mouths when they shouldn't have. Why did they, everybody's encouraging Shaul in his desire to kill David. Not one of Saul's generals, not one of Shaul's generals stood up and said, you know what? I'm not sure this is a good idea. Not one. So really, he said, the crime didn't really start when they surrounded my house. The crime didn't start when Shaul HaMelech threw a spear at me. The crime started when no one opened their mouth. That's really the origin of the crime. Now it's led to the fact that there are soldiers around my house. And he says, who listens? You know, people who boast, people who boast are generally cowards. People who boast about how great they are not usually doing it because they're really great. We can all agree on that. If they thought David HaMelech was listening to what they were saying, would they be boasting? Because there's always a chance David's going to come out of this and be the next king. And we see at other times that hedging your bets in the royal politics is always a good move. Right? That a lot of times when it's not clear who's going to be the king, you see advisors buddying up to everybody. So they think, who's listening? I said, then they're such cowards and they're so they're bragging, but they're such cowards that if I could hear them, they wouldn't even be bragging. They think that I can't hear them. And therefore, that's why they're bragging. And they think no one's listening. And then he says, in the next verse, Ve'ata Hashem, you're laughing at them, Hashem. To Agul Kol Goyim, you'll mock them along the other nations, because if somebody is listening. It's a famous story about Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, who was the compiler of the Mishnah, that when he was on his deathbed, his Talmidim asked him for a bracha. Now, Rebbe, as he's called, was not only the compiler of the Mishnah, Gadol Hador, and a tremendous tzaddik, he was extremely wealthy, and Chazal tell us that it was rare that so many accomplishments in so many areas rested all with one person. So his Talmidim came, and they asked him for a bracha. And he said, I give you a bracha. So they all gather around his bedside. He says, I give you a bracha. You should fear Hashem as much as you fear each other. That's a bracha? How about a bracha that I become like the next Gadol Hador, where I have three Lexuses magically appear in my dry? That's some serious bracha, sir, Rebbe. That's the biggest bracha he could give them, and then he died. As you know, people are conscious of what others think of them and what others' opinions are. You modify your behavior when other people are around. That when those same people aren't around, when you're by yourself, you have your by yourself behavior, right? I have my own by myself behavior. I'm sure everyone here doesn't have this. But people act differently. I act differently when other people are around. Just, you know, as a silly example, other people are around, I kick off my shoes, I put my feet up on the couch. I don't really do that. I put my feet up on the couch, theoretically, right? You know, you act differently now if the house is full of guests. I don't kick my shoes off and put my feet up on the couch because you act differently when people are watching. So he says, you know what? You should be that cognizant that Hashem is always watching. If you're at least that cognizant that Hashem is always watching, you'll do good in life. People are not even as cognizant that Hashem is always watching, he said, as the other people are always watching. So David Amal says, they think no one's listening. Ah, David can't hear us, we're going to get him. Well, you know what? He says, Hashem's listening, and Hashem is mocking them. As Hashem will mock all of the nations who make fun and who think the Klal Yisrael isn't listening. A person needs to be as cognizant, he's saying. If they were as cognizant that Hashem was listening, as they were worried about whether David could hear them or not, how many times do I see my kids like whisper to each other because when so-and-so can't hear? So-and-so can't hear, but Hashem can hear everything. They're like, well, yes, 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 yes. That's true. People need to be... And he says, these guys are so foolish, these soldiers. They're brandishing their swords. David can't hear us. We're going to go get him. We're so great. We're on a mission from Shalom. Hashem's listening to the whole thing and mocking them. It goes out in the next Pasuk, in Pasuk Yud, to say, Uzo elef taishvora. And his power for you, I'm waiting for. Ki elokim yisgav. For Hashem is my stronghold. Now his power I'm waiting for. You notice in the translation here it says his power, and it doesn't say whose power we're talking about. And the translation has his with a small h here. The question is, whose power is he referring to? Right, that he's lying in wait for. So it could be that it's talking about Shaul HaMelech. He's waiting for his power, because Hashem is my stronghold and Hashem will show up. But it could mean he means his power with a capital H. It's Hashem's power that he's waiting for, because Hashem is my stronghold. And it shows an attitude, says Rav Hirsch, that I'm waiting for his power. Whether it's his with a capital H or whether it's his with a lower H, but what does it say is that I'm not going to do anything. I will not raise my hand against a melech that was anointed by Hashem. Al tash face. I will not destroy myself in order to save myself. Can't destroy yourself in order to save yourself. So I'm waiting for his power. Either Shaul will come and Hashem will take care of him. Hashem will take care of him where he is. I won't raise my hand against an anointed king of Klal Yisrael. Elokeich azdi yikadmeini. The kindness of Hashem will anticipate me. Eloki b'areini. The next page. B'sorai. Will befall my wishfuls. Now, anticipating me means that Hashem has promised that a melech, kings have extra help from Hashem in many different ways. Now, David HaMelech has been anointed that he's to be the king, but you see at this point, he's really not doing a lot of kingly things. He's really not ruling as the king, even though it's been decided that he will be the king. They're saying, but since I'm going to be the king, Hashem said I'm going to be the king, so I believe I will be. So since I'm going to be the king, Hashem, help me now in anticipation that, you know, I'm on the road to being the king, so let's sort of borrow some of that help in advance, so he can make sure I become the king. So he's anticipating Hashem's help because he's the king. Right? Kings have less free will than regular people, and they get extra help from Hashem. Well, regular people is the right word. How about non-kings, un-kings, de-kings? People who are not kings. Civilians. And it's on to say, Al tahargeim pan yishkisu ami. Now don't slay them, lest my people forget. Hani emu b'chelf v'horidemi. I make them wander around and cast them down. Maginani Hashem. Now, he doesn't want Hashem to come along and just, with a big bolt of lightning, strike down everyone. He wants Hashem to repay them mita keneged mita in public, so that everybody will see the justice of Hashem. He wants his tormentors to end up hiding in caves, living off of scraps, where everybody can see that Hashem does everything mita keneged mita. That's a better punishment, he feels, than striking them down, because everybody will be able to learn a lesson from that. Chatas pimu devar, chasemu. Because of the sin of their mouth and the word of their lips, the chaldu, the gaidim, they should be ensnared by their own arrogance, umeelo mikachash yisapheru, and because of the curses and the falsehoods that they recount. Now, in the previous verse, he says he wants them to be punished so that everyone else will see that it's Hashem's justice. But in this verse, he's adding that they should be ensnared by their own arrogance. Not only should everybody else realize that it's a just punishment, but even they themselves should realize. Many times people are punished, or things happen, and everybody recognizes what's going on, except the person themselves. A lot of times after a person's life is over, people look back and they see what a great lesson, this and that. But did the person at the time see that? Maybe, sometimes yes, sometimes no. So he's saying, not only does he want everybody to see that these people are punished, mita keneged mita, he wants them themselves to realize that this is their punishment. And not just think, wow, what a coincidence, I happen to be out here in a cave eating scraps. Well, that's pretty coincidental, Tavid HaMelech did that too. So not just everybody else should realize that their punishment, they should realize it too. He says, Kale v'chema, destroy in wrath the chayv enim until they are no more. V'yedu ki elukim moshel v'yakov l'aspeya oret selah. Right, and they'll know that Hashem rules to the ends of the earth, Salah. So then, whatever punishment they have coming, go ahead and mete out to them. But first, make sure that everybody sees Hashem's justice. Now he says, Kale Chema, destroy them in wrath. Kale Veinemu, and destroy them until they are no more. Right. So now what he wants is, after everybody has seen but they have their just deserts, then come. Then destroy. Then whatever punishment they have coming, let her loose. But first, make sure that everybody sees the justice of Hashem, that they're being punished, mita keneged mita, but there can be a lesson in it for everybody, besides just their punishment. And when he says, destroy them in wrath, destroy them till they are no more, he keeps using the same word over again, Kale, Kale. And Chazal say it's because he wants it to come little by little, by levels like that. He doesn't want a great big destruction. Let it come slowly and by level up, so everybody will see until finally they're destroyed. So if they suffer because they disappear in a ship at sea, that's not going to be what David HaMelech wants. He wants everybody to be able to see every punishment along the way, and then destroy them. And interestingly enough, he doesn't say Hashem rules Israel, which is what he usually says. Hashem rules Yaakov. It's a slap in the face to Klal Yisrael. Because when Klal Yisrael is less worthy, they're called Yaakov. When they're more worthy, they're called Yisrael. David HaMelech here feels that Klal Yisrael has a bit of guilt in this matter. For nobody stood up and said, you're doing the wrong thing. Not one of these soldiers, and even the soldiers maybe are scared, but there's generals and lieutenants and captains and majors and advisors and planners and technical coordinators and weapons manufacturers and spear sharpeners and a military industrial complex of the day. And not one of them said, whoa, are you sure you're doing the right thing? So the almost says, I can't call them Yisrael. They're Yaakov right now. I can't bring myself to call them Yisrael because they're complicit in this. Not one of them, not one person stood up. What'd you think? And he says, V'yashuvu la'arav, may they return in the evening, yahamuk ha'kelev, and howl like a dog, v'yisovavu ir. Now, returning and howling like a dog. May they return toward evening and howl like the dog, going around the city.
David HaMelech says that returning and howling like a dog is Chazal tells us, is a reference that David is talking about to the war of Gog and Magog. Because he's howling around like the dog and going around the city, may they return toward even and howl like a dog going around the city. These people that are complicit, that are not speaking up, are going to pay the price as Mashiach comes and the war of Gog and Magog. And you're all going to say, well, how would that be? Well, I'm glad you asked that. The war of Gog and Magog is something we really don't talk about that much. We did have a shiur once on Gog and Magog, and it's only a side point, really, to this kapitel, but I'll mention a few of the highlights. There's a lot of nevuas in Nach about the war of Gog and Magog. The main ones are in Sefer Yechezkel, in Perek Lamed Ches and Lamed Tes. And in Parshas Vayechi, the Medrash Rabba says that Yaakov Avinu was trying to tell his children about the war of Gog and Magog. And the war of Gog and Magog is either going to be right before Mashiach comes, as he's coming, or after he comes. Isn't that clear everything up?
But he's going to come.
It's got, so when exactly the war of Gog and Magog appears is not exactly clear, but Gog is the Melech, is the name of the Melech, and he's going to gather the nations of the world to conduct a war against Kaiser. In this war, Mashiach ben Yosef, who will be the person that initially appears to be Mashiach, will be killed. Magog is the name of the nation that Gog rules over. So I say the war of Gog and Magog. Gog is the person, and Magog is the country. Now Chazal tell us in the Gemara the names of the countries that will comprise this nation of Magog. Unfortunately, we don't really know what they mean. We've lost the knowledge of what the names of those countries really mean. There are a lot of different names of countries. There are some of which sound familiar, like Ashkenaz. But there's a list of countries there that will combine to form this nation of Magog. But unfortunately, we don't have the knowledge anymore of what exactly those people are and which countries are going to comprise the nation of Magog. But Gog will do miracles, and people will see that he's successful, and they will think that Hashem is with him, and they will back him in his war against Klal Yisrael. He will come three times against Yerushalayim, and on the third time he will be successful in conquering Yerushalayim. Doesn't sound so good so far, does it? In fact, the war of Gog and Magog is considered to be so bad that Chazal said they want to be saved from three things: the birth pangs of Mashiach, the din of Gehenim, and the pains of the war of Gog and Magog. Those are considered the three most terrible things to be in terms of pain and agony: Gehenim, the birth pangs of Mashiach, and the war of Gog and Magog. And in fact, it's supposed to be, as I'll say, that if you to eat shalashudos, the third meal on Shabbos, especially when one's not hungry, such as in our winter times when shalashudos is like almost before lunch, all right, is considered a segula to be saved from the pain of these things, such as the war of Gog and Magog. It seems, from the way Chazal understand it, that what will happen is once Gog captures Yerushalayim, we're not fighting here. Hashem will miraculously toss out Gog and Magog, and through some amazing miracle, will lead Mashiach up to Yerushalayim, restoring everything to our hands, and the entire world will then recognize that all of this has been leading up to the restoration of Hashem's kingdom of Jews, and that will usher in the era of Mashiach. Nothing comes easy. How difficult it is when Mashiach comes, and the war of Gog and Magog is somewhat up to us. So, Gog is going to come, and he's going to bring Magog with him. And it's going to look like he's going to be tremendously successful.
And that time, somehow with Mashiach involved, right, Hashem will somehow, miraculously, do something that will lay waste to Gog and Magog, and will make it clear that Mashiach is here, and restore the ruling of Klal Yisrael and Hashem over the nations. So when we see a knock or in a kapitel, a tossed off, it's a really big thing. A series of shirim just on what Gog and Magog is about. But there's some sort of tremendous war of some nature, we don't really know exactly how it's going to work, that precedes the coming of Mashiach. In order for Hashem, just like, you know, when we went out of Mitzrayim, we didn't just like get up one morning and go out the back door. We had the Makos. The Chazal tell us the Makos were for the Mitzrayim and for the Jews. When Hashem has a point to make, I don't want to sound flip, but when Hashem has a point to make, he makes it in a big way. There's going to be a point here. The Gog and Magog is going to serve somewhat of a purpose like the Makos did. Attention world, it's over now. I, Hashem, have had enough, and this is what's going to happen now. I, Hashem, have had enough of the way the Mitzrayim were treating the Jews, and if you're not going to see it yourself, I'm going to send you Makos. And if the Jews aren't going to see it themselves, let them see the Makos also, and strengthen their own emunah. So some similar kind of cataclysmic thing is going to happen at the time of Mashiach. It's not going to be the kind of thing where you wake up one morning and there's a message on your answering machine that Mashiach is here, and by the way, we're waiting for you at the airport. Right? It just doesn't work that way. How it works exactly, we don't know. Right? Because the Navi is describing and Chazal are telling us, but most of these things are not clearly spelled out. So we only have certain ideas of how things work. And beyond that, as many great Gedolim have said, we'll know when it happens. Right, but there's some cataclysmic idea that precedes it. So says David HaMelech, you know what? They're going to return, and I want these guys to be the guys that when Gog and Magog come and they lay waste to Yerushalayim, and there are people wandering around the city like dogs who can't find what to eat, I want it to be these guys. Make it be these guys right here. These guys that surrounded my house and waved their swords with such great bravado, let's see how tough they are. Let them have their punishments when Gog and Magog comes, and let them wander the streets like dogs. Right? They'll wander without being able to eat, he says, without being sated, and they won't have anywhere to sleep. Let's see how tough they are then. Fani Hashiru Zecha, but me, I'll be singing the praises of Hashem. Ve'ranen la'boker chazdecha, and I'll be singing joyously in the morning of your kindness. Ki ayisa miskavli, for you've been a stronghold to me, umanos biyom tsarli, and a refuge to me in the day of my distress. Uzi, you've been my strength. Elecha Zemera, to you I'll sing. Ki Elokim Miskavi, for Hashem is my stronghold. Elokei Chazdi, and my kindness. David HaMelech is making a promise here. And a promise that's hard to keep. This is a verse that everybody should think about before they make promises. He's making a promise. You know what, Hashem? If I become king, I'll never make this mistake. I'll never abuse my power. I will never do what Shaul did. How many times do we say, if it were me, I won't. When I won't. Don't worry. When I become, I won't. Tough words to keep. David HaMelech had a lot of trials when he was king, most of which he passed successfully. But we've talked before, and we'll see in many more kapitala, right? Don't ask for things. Don't ask for trouble. My wife has an expression. She says, our credit card doesn't have a high enough limit to borrow trouble. Okay? It's a good expression. David HaMelech, he says, you know what? I promise. And he means it with all the sincerity and the amunah and the strength that we see in this kapitel. Right? Hashem will save me. Hashem will do it because he's told me I'm supposed to be the king. And then when I'm the king, I won't abuse my power. I'll make sure to never do what Shaul is doing now. Dangerous promise to make, because Hashem is my kindness. Never ask for something. If Hashem wants to give you a test, he knows your address. He knows where you are. You don't need to ask. People tend to make promises like that, don't they? They tend to make promises that, well, you know, When I, just as a sort of silly example, when I grow up, the kids always say, you know, whatever your parents do, you're going to do that, right? When I grow up, I won't make my kids go to bed early, right? And we always want to say, when I do get to a certain thing, then I'll do this. You know what? Just trust that Hashem will take care of things. When you get there, you'll figure it out then. Don't arrange too many things in advance. Now, one of the things we do is to try and figure out what the overall, overarching message is in the Kippitzim. And I had a beautiful one prepared. And then I read something in Rabbi Rubin's book, which I've recommended many times before. The exact name of it is called Rabbi Rubin's book. No, it's not. It's called Rhythm of the Heart. And I decided that his was much better than mine. So Rabbi Rubin's point of what this kapitel is about, I thought was significantly better. So I threw out what I had said, and what I'm going to tell you is based on the idea that he brought in this book. It's a three-volume set. It's in English. Each kapitel has maybe a couple of pages of ideas, and says, you know, if you look up in the dictionary the definition of dignity, the definition is, says, the state of being worthy, honored, or esteemed. Dignity is what we call that part of ourselves that enables a person to feel good about themselves. The reason a person feels good about themselves is because they feel that they have a certain dignity and they're worthy, and that enables a person to feel good about themselves. Dignity and a sense of self-worth that goes with dignity is something that's inside of a person, and it's self-generated. It can't be given to you by someone else, and it can't be taken away by someone else. Dignity is formed by a person having a proper self-image of who they are and what they are. A person sees themselves in a proper light and a proper self-image. They have a certain amount of dignity if they're a creation of Hashem. How is it possible that people in terrible situations, you always read these stories, just let's use the Holocaust as an example. They're marching people up to the gas chambers, and you read these stories about people who stood up, right, and marched in with their heads held high, right, singing Shema Yisrael. And you know, you read that, and how does somebody do something like that? I was just reading in the Abarbanel that when he led the Jews out of Spain, they picked up their stuff, they got in a line, or as much as Jews ever get in a line, right, and they marched out with their heads held high, singing to hell. How do you do such a thing? They left every single possession they ever had behind. They left a lot of their family behind, who had been forced to convert. And those that were left marched out with their heads held high and a sense of dignity. How does a person do that? How is such a thing possible? The answer is because as long as you have the proper self-image, you're held high no matter what you have to do. But when you become shaky in your self-image, which is the big problem in our times, people lose their dignity. You ever see certain people that tend to have sort of what I would call like a royal look about them, or a regal bearing, I think they call it. You know, sometimes you see it in Gedalim, or you see it in the Rebbe, you see it in Talmid HaChachamim, but they have a certain sort of an air about them, right? A gravitas, as they would say in the wherever they would say that. I have certain gravitas about it. Well, this is a person who knows who they are and what they are and what's what and who's who and has dignity about it. Doesn't mean that they're overconfident. This is a person who knows what's what and who's who and what's expected of them. Because they have a self-image that's in alignment with what they're supposed to be. When Reb Aaron came to the United States and started the Lakewood Yeshiva, now today Lakewood is a huge yeshiva and they have fundraisers all over the world. Reb Aaron used to get driven around and knock on businessmen's door and in an almost impossible to understand Yiddish, tell them that we're starting a yeshiva in Kuttel in the United States where everybody's just going to sit and learn all day and we need some money. That went over real well. Okay? And more times than not, he was treated with disrespect and was pretty much tossed out on his ear. And the people who drove him around all testified to the same thing. Never bothered him whatsoever, a drop. all day long. Knock, knock, you know, the Reb Aryeh to see you. A little tiny fellow comes in from Europe, right? You know, jabbering Yiddish at them a mile a minute. This is a very important thing. We're going to have a kail in the United States. We're looking at him like he's from another planet. What are you talking about? Right? And by the way, I need $5,000. I just picture it. I can't, you know. So sometimes people gave him money. And more often than not, they tossed him out in his ear with more than a few people giving him a piece of their mind. Didn't bother him at all. Next door. Knack, knack, knack. How is it possible that he could do that day in and day out? Right? Because you know what? He had dignity. Because he had a self-image that, you know what? What I'm doing is correct. This is what Hashem wants me to do. Therefore, I can do it with my head held high. Enemies can take anything from you but your dignity. And even Hitler knew this. Hitler never wasted time trying to convert the Jews. Because he knew you can't take that from them. You can't take dignity away from a Jew. You can lead them into their death, but you can't take dignity away from them. Even the most treacherous enemy can't do that. The only thing that can kill a Jew is to take away his dignity, and the only thing that takes away your dignity is your own thoughts and your own doubts about whether or not you're doing the right thing. Now, David HaMelech had an enemy. This enemy happens to have been his father-in-law. Now, that in itself may or may not be unusual, and we won't comment on that throughout history, but this father-in-law happened to be the king of Klal Yisrael. So I would say that would put it a different spin on it than most people would be used to. And he also happened to have an entire army and nation at his disposal, which probably also puts a little bit of different spin on it. Right? And David HaMelech is sneaking out a window in the middle of the night. Now, he's the king of Israel. What does it mean to be a king? I've talked about this before. You can't imagine just the president of the United States, Lahavdil, having to sneak out of a window of the White House. He'd be a laughing stock. Every piece of shred of dignity he ever had would be gone instantly. So here's a king of Israel, someone who, when he rides by, everybody has to bow face down on the floor, and if your face and knees aren't all the way down, it's a capital crime, and they take you out and kill you. And he has to sneak out the back window and try and avoid the soldiers. And he didn't feel that he lost 1 ounce of his dignity. I said, Hashem is going to help me. I'm borrowing a little bit on the advance that Hashem's given me because I'm the king. Hashem made me the king. That's what I am. That's my self-image. I see myself as the king of Israel because that's what Hashem told me to be. It doesn't matter that I have to sneak out the window. Right? Did that change the fact that he saw himself as Hashem's child who's supposed to be doing what Hashem wanted him to do? Did that change the fact that he saw himself as a Melech Yisrael? The fact that he's sneaking out the window, is skinning his knee on the thing as he's climbing out, and his wife is saying, "Don't forget your shoe over here," and it's almost like an absurd situation. How can a person come out of that and not lose any of their dignity? Because David HaMelech never forgot the picture of what he is. I'm someone who Hashem created to do what Hashem says. And I can keep my head held high under that situation no matter what I'm doing. I can be climbing out a window and skinning my knee. I can be sitting on a throne in the palace, passing judgment. Right? I can be standing before the Sanhedrin. I can be standing in the middle of the base of Mikdash. I can be standing wherever I am. It doesn't matter. I'm the same. Right? Because that's what I am. That's what Hashem made me. That's the message of Kapitel 59. The essence of Kapitel 59 is that you are what you are, and you are what Hashem made you. And that's how those people can walk into the gas chamber with their held high and sing. The fact that they're about to be killed, does that change one drop who they are, what they are? They're a child of Hashem. Hashem's chosen people that Hashem has chosen to do something. If they start having doubts, they can't hold their head quite high, so high. And this affects us. Let's scale it down a little bit. Few of us will ever be in the royal palace, and few of us will ever have a father-in-law that has an entire army at his disposal. Although, I see a few snug grins there thinking of father-in-laws that had just about an army at their disposal, but few of us will ever have a situation like that that's so colorful that it's recorded enough. But all of us have situations that plague us with doubts. Will we be successful in this? Am I doing the right thing in this? We have doubts about ourselves. Am I good enough at this? Am I a good enough mother? Am I a good enough father? Am I doing this correctly? And you know what happens when you have doubts like that and you belittle yourself? Your self-image changes. And that's the only thing, says David HaMelech, that can kill you. The only thing that can harm a Jew, right, and take away their dignity and take away their success is their own doubts and their own changing of their own self-image. In a day-to-day situation, a person keeps in mind that no matter what kind of situation they find themselves in right now, whether they're climbing out a window, whether they're trying to do a carpool that they're 20 minutes late for and everybody's going to be yelling at them, whether they're trying to get their kid for the 400th time to clean up the room, whether they're trying to close a business deal, whether they're trying to learn something that they've struggled with for a long time and they can't quite get a handle on it, whatever they're trying to accomplish in life, David HaMelech says, you'll accomplish whatever you're supposed to accomplish if you keep the proper image of yourself as someone that Hashem has appointed to be whatever it is that they're supposed to be. In his case, to be the king of Israel, right? In our case, to be B'nai Torah and B'nos Torah, who can walk in the street and walk in our home with our head held high, right? That we do what Hashem wants us to do. Sometimes people are uncomfortable doing Jewish things in public. Sometimes I travel frequently. I have to daven on the plane sometimes. So they get to the airport too early. You get to the airport at 6 o'clock. It's too early to daven. And nowadays, especially, if you see anybody doing any weird things on a plane, you're asking for trouble. And I asked the flight attendants, and I went to the front of the plane. I'm davening. So at first, I felt a little awkward about it because, you know, but as I'm doing it, I'm realizing, listen, this is what I'm supposed to do. If I have the self-image of a person who, if I think, I don't know, I'm supposed to do this or not, maybe, you know what? Maybe I should be making sure I counted the Omer. That's my Omer reminder. Maybe, but if I don't have doubt, Hashem made me. I'm a Jewish person. A Jewish person is supposed to daven in the morning. Right? That's what I'm supposed to do. That's a different person than a person who gets filled with doubt. That's what David HaMelech's lesson is. Right? Maintain your dignity and your success as a Jew by keeping a proper picture of who you are, that you can keep your head held high and accomplish whatever it is that you're supposed to accomplish in that. Any questions?
How did David get out of the house and from the surroundings?
Yeah, I wondered that too.
It just doesn't make sense unless he was hidden until they went away and they all left after they thought they killed
well,
him.
Well, he hid somewhere, and right, they went back to the palace to tell Shaul HaMelech that they were successful. When they went back to the palace, then he quickly zoomed away. So he climbed out the window and was hiding around there somewhere. And then when they went back, oh, we're so successful, he was able to run away. And then Shaul said, well, if you're so successful, where is he? Oh, yeah, good point, ran back, and by that time he was already gone. Next week, unfortunately, there is no shir.